The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. Welcome to the Lodge. It's time to settle in for the Buena Vista Wrestling Beavercast. Join host Jason Bryant and head wrestling coach Jeff Brees as we talk all things BV Wrestling. Now, on to the show.
Episode 5. The Lodge has moved to Fargo, North Dakota here in mid-July. This is episode 5 of the BVU Wrestling Beavercast here with head wrestling coach Jeff Brees, Jason Bryant along with you as always. Jeff, this is an interesting spot because this is the center of the wrestling universe for 8 days in July. You're on staff with Team Iowa with the Greco. Right now we're wrestling Greco-Roman. Freestyle will be later in the week as we record this here on July 21st. I think it's the 21st.
I think it is the 21st.
When you come to Fargo, for those who have never been to the Cadet and Junior Nationals, by the time you're at like the third, this is my fourth day here already, and by the time you get to like Tuesday, you're like, what time is it? And you say, Tuesday? So, Jeff, you've wrestled out here, you've coached out here for Pennsylvania. Now your first year coaching with Team Iowa, what's that experience been like?
So far, it's been really good, but it was a little odd taking the credential picture yesterday and looking down and seeing Iowa. That was the first time ever being on some staff other than Pennsylvania.
Because when you were at NC State, either wrestling or coaching, you were still part of the Pennsylvania staff.
Yes. And I got some grief last night from the PA guys. Good-natured, but they're just picking on me. They're like calling me a traitor, making fun of me a little bit for jumping sides. And I said, well, that's fine. If you guys want to keep sending Pennsylvania kids to the Midwest, then we can work this out.
We'll talk about the recruiting angle here in a moment. But when we look at the international styles, and you know, we put out these numbers each year about the Division I percentages of the champs and All-Americans that wrestle in this. I think over the past 20 years, it's about 63% of the D1 All-Americans have placed in this tournament some type of your career. And the champs over the last 10 years, I think it's 89% of the champions at least wrestled in this or were All-Americans at some point. And it's, you know, people look at the international styles, especially Greco, and it's like, well, where does that help in terms of my collegiate and folk style wrestling? From your vantage point, you wrestle both styles out here. And now you're coaching both styles. What is the biggest thing for Greco-Roman that high school wrestlers and college wrestlers can even know? Because it's not too late to start wrestling Greco-Roman.
Yeah, you get two major things from Greco. Whether you ever get good at it, whether it's what you ultimately want to do, Greco just makes you tough. There's no, like, easy points. It's tough and grindy. And even if you're a super smooth thrower, you have to be tough to wrestle Greco. There's no, like, faking your way through it. And you learn to hand fight. You really learn to hand fight, and most people don't realize that's important until they get to college. They hear coaches talk about it, and yeah, I'm going to hit a single leg, and it's fine. You're going to wrestle guys in college. They're not going to let you touch your legs unless you move them 5, 6, 7 times. You got to learn to hand fight, and Greco's awesome for that. I mean, that helped me a lot as a wrestler and probably, you know, helped me get a little bit further with some limited athleticism because I learned to hand fight. So it's really important, and I love seeing guys just compete. Kids that are coming out here for Greco, most of them, it's not their first choice. There are certain states and certain kids, that's their ideal thing, but it just shows me you love to compete and you like to be in the battle.
Now you see states like Illinois, which a lot of their kids aren't doubling up. There are a lot of kids that come here just for Greco because their system's so good. Minnesota's the same way. Iowa, actually, believe it or not, folks, I did some numbers with this almanac that I've got. Been putting out, and I looked, and I found the unofficial team scores. They've been keeping a team score since 2005 officially, but Iowa does officially have a cadet Greco-Roman championship. It was in 2006. Now, 15 of those 31 titles are owned by your home state, so it's really been limited. It's Pennsylvania, California's got 4, Minnesota and Illinois have 5, Iowa and Wisconsin have 1. So, I mean, there's a lot of room for growth to knock off Illinois, which is the power right now. And then, of course, Iowa's got the history. I mean, a lot of medals from Iowa, just that one championship. But when you look at the kids that are wrestling Greco, you're talking this is not their preferred style. But when you get a kid that really starts to take to Greco and he sees more success in Greco than freestyle, what do you tell that kid in terms of, you know, college choices? Because, yeah, we've got Northern Michigan, but especially at the Division III level, where those kids, if they're really good in Greco, might not be – they're getting maybe the look at Northern Michigan or the Olympic Training Center, but Division III has got a pretty good option there too.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of really good Greco guys scattered all throughout Division III wrestling, and there may not be household names, but if you've been paying attention, you know who they are.
Joe Rao, for example.
You know, don't want to talk a whole lot about Augsburg. I feel like they get talked about enough. But they had a pretty good Greco guy at 125. He did some good things for him.
Yeah,
so,
couple national titles.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of kids that will get overlooked. And I mean, I'm officially on the freestyle staff for Team Iowa, but I came out 2 days early to see the Greco kids. There's a lot of hidden gems of kids that are wrestling Greco, and you know, sometimes they get lost in the shuffle, and they're really, really good wrestlers. It's just freestyle out here is insane. You can get lost in the shuffle in freestyle really easily because it's by far the best tournament you can be at.
Yeah, and one thing that's been different, in last year, the USA Wrestling changed this from the old vertical pairing, which was the pool system, and it was brutal. You went through that, and now you've got a true semis and a true blood round. I mean, you know which match you have to win to become an All-American. From a coaching standpoint, does that make it easier to coach the kids that are in those situations going, okay, you know you have – it's not like you have to wait for another guy to lose. You're counting. There's six guys with one loss, two of them hit, and you're going to catch the bye here. It's easier to explain to a kid.
It's a lot easier to explain. It's a lot easier to follow.
Easier to explain to the parents, too,
yes,
who might not be familiar with freestyle and Greco.
I miss the old way, though. There was a lot of mental toughness that went into winning a Fargo title to begin with. And then with the vertical pairing, and you didn't know, maybe you won the match to put you in the finals. Maybe you didn't. Maybe somebody gets upset and you got to go wrestle another one. You had to be extraordinarily mentally tough and just remain even keel and focused to win. And there's still a lot of that now, but there are a lot of curveballs that could get thrown at you in vertical bracketing. This is a lot more streamlined. You know what you need to do.
Well, I brought this up on Short Time with Richard Immel the other day, and Brett Haas from The Predicament, you know, the great Iowa publication, is sitting next to me, and we were talking about bad draws. And there was a kid from my high school in 07 from Virginia that wrestled Mike Benefiel and Chris Perry in the first two rounds. And Brett goes, look at my bracket. Junior 220 in 2012, his first round match was Kyle Snyder. His second round match was Jaden Cox. Thanks for coming out, man.
Yeah.
I asked him yesterday, I go, so who's better? He goes, they're both very, very good. So so I got to mention The Predicament here on the Beavercast. Now let's shift a little bit more to Buena Vista here. Actually, you know what? I want to hold off on that. Yeah. Your career, you placed out here a bunch of times. You were telling a story about wrestling Travis Lee, who was a two-time NCAA champ at Cornell from Hawaii. You got some. You have good memories or nightmares about that? Or are they just kind of fuzzy?
It's not fuzzy. I remember it very clearly. When you take a beating like that, you don't forget it ever. My claim to fame in that match was I was the only guy that he didn't five in the entire tournament. I got gut-wrenched a whole bunch of times, but I was the only guy that he didn't five. He was a monster, and that was a year that I All-Americaned, but he just kind of came out of nowhere, and by the time I saw him at the end of the tournament, I was like, I can't let this kid take me down because I'm going to get lifted or I'm going to get gutted. And it was a terrible mindset going into the match, but I knew where my strengths were, and it certainly wasn't my gut defense. And he had an amazing gut, and I think I might have scored first, and then I eventually got taken down and didn't go well after that.
And you won several medals out here. I mean, obviously, that was a heyday of when Pennsylvania was coming out here and just pretty much, especially the cadet level, where, you know, Pennsylvania still has all the records. But now, you know, Iowa's strength has always been in freestyle. We've good Greco-Roman wrestling in Iowa, but, you know, they've got the most junior national champs in freestyle history. I think it's around 60. And then a lot of that, those early tournaments starting in 71, they were all in Iowa. They were in Iowa City. They were in Cedar Falls. Iowa's not that far from Fargo, depending on which part of the state you're in. But now, when you look at the tradition and coming into Iowa initially as an outsider, now that you've been around the coaches that have been on these staffs for a long time, and some of those coaches were probably part of those teams back then, when gearing up the Iowa kids to wrestle freestyle out here, I mean, it seems to be they're primed and ready.
Yeah, kind of the mantra going around freestyle camp, and it was some guys that I scrapped with back in the day, Trent and Travis Paulson, when they were tiny before they grew up and became monsters, but they just kept walking around telling guys, you're from Iowa. You're supposed to win. That was the mantra of camp. And it wasn't like braggadocio. It was just trying to set the mindset of, we've done this before. We traditionally should be expected to win. That's the mindset you should have going out there. And I mean, there's history to prove it.
Yeah, of course. They're turning up the volume as they're testing here. We're in a break. little AC/DC right there. Chris Moen doing the audio there. But so as we continue on here, shifting to the Buena Vista angle here, you've seen Division I college coaches on staffs. I mean, you saw that in Pennsylvania. I mean, you were an assistant D1 coach on a Pennsylvania staff. And you've got that. You've got people in Iowa that have been on coaching staff. You see some D3 coach, like Adam Wilson, the new assistant at Trine. He's still on the Virginia staff because he was coaching at Washington Lee. Eric Wentz, the new coach at Greensboro College, is with North Carolina. You're with Iowa. And what do you think it is? How important is it for, you know, the Division III level coaches to get involved with the USA grassroots programs and coaching the cadets and juniors for not just their programs, but what they can bring to their knowledge to, you know, maybe a different look?
Yeah, it's something that I've always really enjoyed doing to start with, and that's where it started. Like, well before it was ever about recruiting, I had coaches that did it for me, and I loved having college coaches come back when I was coming through. So I started doing it even when I was a college wrestler. But you know, for our program specifically, it's really important because kids need to find out what we know. Like, there's still a lot of unknown about BV for some of the more elite kids in the state, and they need to be around us and see what we know. And then I'm not afraid to steal stuff from good coaches. You know, if I'm around guys that are coaching world teams and I can pick something up that I can take back to my guys, just because we're a D3 program doesn't mean I'm not going to use world-level technique. So, it all factors in. A lot of it is about recruiting, but I learn something new every year being on a staff. No matter what state it's been or where I've been, I learn something new or find a way to tweak something. And, you know, it's good to just let people get out and see. I have coaches that will come up to me now and talk to me about kids opposed to me having to call them 5 times and say, hey, can you give me a number for so-and-so? They know what I'm about now, and that helps that they'll reach out to me. So it all factors in.
And how aggressively, obviously, with the cadets, there's and then the rules, Division III contact rules are a little different, and there's exceptions for, like, national team, like, staffs and stuff. But how aggressively, now that you're going into your second year at BV, that you're going, okay, you got these first-year juniors you can get your eye on that are Iowa kids, and now you want kids, you know, you'll take it, you know, anybody wants to wrestle BV, they're welcome, but you're really going to, are you going to focus more on the kids that you know that are here, that you're like, this kid fits a D3 mindset, he likes wrestling, wants that small college atmosphere? I mean, you kind of get a leg up on getting to know these kids.
Yeah, it really helps. I mean, I made sure I spent a lot of time with cadets too, because being new to Iowa, I need to know who the kids are that are coming up and start building relationships with them now. But I have kids that I've already done home visits with and that type of thing that are coming into this senior class that we're really targeting, and I have other kids that I'm just getting to know, and they were diamond in the rough, or I didn't really know who they were when I got to camp, and they just worked their butt off and they jumped out to me. And then every now and then you find out that kid's the valedictorian too, and then he becomes very high on the priority list. But it's kind of a mix of getting to know what's coming up and targeting kids that you know you're already recruiting. But at the same time, it's a fine balance. They're here to win national titles. They're here to come home and be All-Americans. I'm not giving a big sales pitch during camp. I'm not. I want them to be around me, see what I know, see that I know what I'm talking about, that I can help them. But that's really all it should be about. And we'll have a conversation after Fargo. When I get back to Storm Lake, I'll pick up the phone and call kids. But it's about winning titles right now. If I was there just recruiting, they should probably kick me off the staff.
Now, let's shift the gears a little bit and not talk about Fargo. What's things been like at Storm Lake here since obviously you had the social media thing? And then, you know, what's the summer been like? Obviously, there's not a whole lot of contact. I would assume a bunch of people don't necessarily stay around Storm Lake. But, you know, what's the news with the wrestling program and what we got coming up the end of July and into August?
A little bit of more of the same. We talked a lot about infrastructure and behind-the-scenes stuff. We spent a lot of time doing that this summer. Probably didn't get out to as many camps and do quite as much as I would have wanted typically in a typical year. But we took this summer to set up our camp system for next year. I got out to 3 or 4 different states to do clinics and started an early list of, you know, we've already been contacting kids that are not even seniors yet, almost taking a D1 approach to how they're attacking it. Now, they're almost on sophomores now. That's how far D1 is ahead. But taking kind of that approach and getting our name out to kids. And so we spent a lot of time doing that over the summer. And, you know, couple weeks of Fargo camp and a week in Fargo and squeezed a couple days of vacation in there. But
I don't know. You going down to the convention?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm home for 4 days in July, all of July.
You know what? I think I got you beat because, you started. Okay, so from July 17th when I left to come here, I got one day that I sleep in my own bed because I go down to Wabasha, Minnesota, visit a buddy of mine, and then I drive to Green Bay to fly to Fort Lauderdale for the convention. Then I fly back to Green Bay and then drive to, like, St. Ignace on the UP in Michigan for vacation. So I feel you there. But coaches convention, I mean, let's talk about this a little bit. I mean, how important is it for, you know, we're seeing a growing trend. If we actually mentioned this on the D3 show, the Ice Hour, which we do with Jim John McGovern. That's all about Division III wrestling. And, of course, you were the leader on this. BVU, first school with a D3 wrestling podcast. So, yeah. So McGovern saw the idea, kind of ran with his. So, but we've seen a lot more D3 coaches with the Leadership Academy, with, you know, just being part of the convention. How important is it for a Division III coach to be part of the NWCA convention and the Leadership Academy?
It's super important. The Leadership Academy did all kinds of things for me, things that I never would have thought of, that I needed to get better at as a coach and open my eyes up. I encourage everyone to do that. And being a convention, I haven't
And
been
that's not just for college coaches either.
Right.
So if you're a high school coach listening, there's opportunities for you to get a scholarship and go down there and learn from these great mentors.
Yeah, it was great sitting to, like, learn from guys like Brian Smith and Rob Cole and even some of the D3 coaches that were there as part of the Leadership Academy, the guys that had been in the sport for a while and really knew the ins and outs. That was when I kind of had my eyes open to what D3 coaching could be all about, was in the Leadership Academy a few years back. So the Leadership Academy is awesome. I encourage anyone to do it. I actually sent my assistant to it this year. He came back on fire, picked up all kinds of stuff that he loved, and he was like, we have this, we jokingly call it the Bible. I have a program plan that's about 80 pages long and just sits in my office. And he goes, I know where you came up with all this stuff now. I'm like, yeah, I'm not that smart. I just learned from somebody else.
Well, we're about to start a final round here in Carter. Looks like it's looks like we got the cadet. Actually, we got a finals coming up.
Yeah.
So, for those of you listening, go to bvubeavercast.com. Check out the show on iTunes. Leave a rating and review. We'll get more updates. We had a short session here with head coach Jeff Breese. So thanks for listening here at the Lodge. And you got a little bit of a musical soundtrack as well. I mean, we're about to watch some more finals, Jeff.
I'm excited.
It's the greatest place in the world for 8 days in July.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.